I'm not like
good morning. It's now 8:30 in the morning, and I call the State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee meeting to order for January 10th, 2023. There is a quorum present. Representative Hewitt, may I have a motion to approve the minutes of January 5, 2023?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Representative Hewitt moves the approval of the minutes for January 5th, 2023. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails, and the minutes for January 5th, 2023 are approved. Members, I'd like to call to your attention that rules and procedures for the committee have been put in your save folders. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank Lead Nash for speaking with me and discussing the rules. Representative Nash and I agree that whenever possible, we would like to give the public the most opportunity to testify before the committee, and I thank Lead Nash for believing that that is important, as I do. Today, we will have several presentations. We have had to have a change in the order of the presentations. We will begin with the Minnesota Historical Society, so I would ask them to come to the podium first, and then we will move on to Minnesota Management and Budget. We have allotted about 10 minutes for each of these presentations and questions from members. So if you can please keep that in mind as you are coming to the testifiers table. And with that, I will ask the Minnesota Historical Society to please state, whoever's presenting first, to please state their name for the record and begin your presentation. Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair. My name is Kent Whitworth. I'm the Director and CEO of the Minnesota Historical Society. And with me is my colleague, David Kelleher, MNHS Director of Public Policy and Governmental Relations. Thank you so much for the opportunity to provide a brief overview this morning. I know that many of you have visited the Minnesota history and some of our historic sites, but I'd like to extend an invitation to the committee as a group or to each of you as individuals to come and see us for a behind-the-scenes experience at the Minnesota History Center so you can see firsthand the great work that our colleagues on staff do to serve the people of Minnesota. I know our time is very short today, so I'll get right to it. We've got a brief PowerPoint, and in this first slide you see just a few bullets about who we are, and I'll point out that we are the oldest educational institution in the state of Minnesota. And we have a long-standing relationship with the state, actually going back to the territorial legislature. Let's say a little bit about why history matters. Got a colleague that I've worked closely with over the years that talks about history not just being nice, but being necessary. And I think these bullets on this next slide outline why history matters so much and really is necessary to the future of our state from an educational standpoint, from an economic standpoint, and from standpoint of delivering governmental services that MNHS does on behalf of the state of Minnesota. Our mission statement also really, I think, addresses why history matters so much. This is something that we've worked on and adopted about a year and a half ago. That first statement about serving all Minnesotans is critical. But then we get into the why. We cultivate curiosity in Minnesotans, and that we feel like history ultimately enables us to be more inclusive, to be more empathetic, and to be better informed citizens of the state we all love. You find expression of that also in our strategic plan. There is plenty of detail in the packets that are provided, but you can see some of the concepts in these strategic imperatives of our plan. Access, space, which really means that we're pushing history throughout the state of Minnesota, both physically and virtually. Expanding authority and expertise talks about how we not only help Minnesotans understand historical facts, but how we help them engage in the historical process. And that's when the skills inherent in history are learned and then applied throughout people's day-to-day life. Creating a sustainable future is about alignment between our programmatic objectives and our human and our financial resources. So these are the four imperatives on which our strategic plan is built. And if there's an overriding theme of our strategic plan, it's relevance. Moving right along, I'd like to pose a question. How do you learn history? There are a few images here that reinforce that. Frankly, we look forward to conversations with each of you to learn more about your experience with history in its many different forms. We learn from the past in a lot of different ways. Some of us visit historic sites, some read books, some do family history, and some attend programs and lectures. Each of these are important ways to engage with our past. And through that engagement, we learn about the many connections, both between past and present, and also connections between one another. Here are just a few ways that we engage the public in learning about history. You see historic sites, exhibitions, education, our deep collections, and then what we do to serve the state through heritage preservation. And of course, the MNHS Press is the oldest press, again, in the state of Minnesota. Many of you know we're in the textbook business. Northern Lights is not only a printed publication, but also a variety of online resources. Some 90% of sixth graders across the state use Northern Lights when they study Minnesota history. Historic sites. We like to talk about from Jeffers Petroglyphs in the southwest corner of the state to Split Rock Lighthouse up along the North Shore. We manage actually 30 historic sites on behalf of the state of Minnesota. 26 are open to the public. That includes, as you see, more than 140 structures, most of them historic, as you would imagine. And then would like to say just a little bit about collections. Perhaps a picture is worth a thousand words. You see the from floor to ceiling stack of state archives and the forklift used to access that. That image plus the numbers to the left there give you a sense of the scale of the collections that we care for on behalf of the people of Minnesota. We are proud of our statewide outreach. Pre-pandemic, we served more than a million people through our historic site network, and that included some 200,000 school students and more than 5 million visits to the Historical Society's website. We are grateful to engage through other avenues, and you see some of the statistics there. The Minnesota History Day program is frankly the strongest in the country and has been for a number of years. And we reach, in many cases, 25 to 30,000 middle and high school students. And we have more than our share of national winners. We have more than 15,000 members, making us, by that standard, one of the largest state historical societies in the country. And our colleagues on staff and our volunteers are really what make MNHS go. We're so grateful for the dedication and the expertise that paid staff, interns, and non-paid staff, our volunteers, contribute day in and day out. We hope to have the opportunity for more in-depth conversations about our budget, but for today's presentation, here's a brief snapshot of our budget. And you see that state support is an essential foundation for our work. You also see that we do our part to add to this. Our talented development team works with generous Minnesotans, members, individual donors, foundations, and corporations, all which support our work. Our state budget request is outlined in the next slide. Our base budget request for each year is $23.9 million. And then you see a couple of bullets there that signal where we are headed, the challenges and the opportunities and the needs that we have moving toward a full return to complete service to the people of Minnesota. Continuing to work on the financial needs to remain sustainable. And then obviously with the buildings, the infrastructure we have across the state, always maintenance and preservation of our facilities is a high priority. So I leave you with a question. that I hope sparks your imagination for future conversations with M&HS. How do you do history? We look forward to visiting with the committee as a group and also with each of you individually in the near future. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much for your presentation. Are there any member questions? Lead Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Whitworth, Mr. Kelleher, thank you for being here. On slide 14, there's something really important missing as to how many certain things do you have in the archives, and that's maps. Can you maybe tell the committee? Because really that's all we should care about. No, my degrees are in geography, and I'm a trained cartographer, but you have an impressive collection, and I think that's worth noting, and are hoping that we do a field trip, because that's where I'm going to disappear when we go over there. But if you could also make available to my new members, because we have three new members, would you mind dropping a copy of the book off by their office for them to take a look at? Because it's being passed through committee and it goes pretty quickly, and you're going to take it when you leave, but it would be handy if you could do that for our membership.
Absolutely.
But always a good opportunity to hear from you. Always enjoy going over to see what you've got. You do engaging things at the museum, and it's worth the trip. So.
Thank you, Lead Nash. Any closing comments you'd like to leave with us as you have?
Chair Cleburne, Representative Nash, we are happy to provide copies of Northern Lights to members of your caucus and others on the committee that might be interested. Technically, I think that needs to be a loan, but we are happy for you to hang on to those as long as you find that valuable. So, and thank you so much for calling out the map collection in particular. We've had the privilege of discussing that with you before and appreciate your passion for that particular part of our collection.
And we won't forget Sherlock Holmes.
Well, thank you, Chair Cleburne. We are very excited that Sherlock will be at the Minnesota History Center through April 2nd. And we talk about why history matters. The reason that exhibition is at the History Center is to remind people that detective metaphor is just a great way to help the public understand what history is and how it works and the skills that are so valuable to all of us in our daily life. So thank you.
Thank you very much for your presentation, and it's always a pleasure to be with both of you.
Thank you
so much. And now if we can ask management and budget to come forward. Commissioner and Deputy Commissioner, it's great to be with you this morning. When you're ready, if you'll just state your name for the record, and then please proceed with your presentation. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chair. Members, for the record, my name is Jim Showalter, Commissioner of Minnesota Management and Budget. We're pulling up our slides as we speak. I'm joined today by Deputy Britta Raton, and George Shardlow is making a in-person introduction. He's our new legislative director, and I just want to make sure that you get to know him. Lucy Tao, our new legislative coordinator, and the ever-present Brian Hornbecker, our executive budget officer, who works with many of the agencies in this area. So thank you for the opportunity.
Please proceed.
Yeah. The first slide just shows you the overview of our mission, vision, and values as an agency, Minnesota Management and Budget, as well as our goals. Our mission is really about being good stewards of the state's financial and human resources. As commissioner of MMB, you know, sometimes you may go to national associations and you realize it's like, where's our state treasurer? Where's our controller? Where's our state employee relations director? They're all MMB. The state has merged all of those functions into our agency, and we're really proud of those responsibilities. MMB provides foundational services that are the backbone for all state activities, whether they're agencies, boards, commissions, and in fact, all three branches of government. We achieve that broad scope of work from accounting and budgeting to debt management to financial reporting to human resources policies, insurance and benefits, employee recruitment and retention, and providing employee enterprise-wide training on the human resources side. We do all those things together in an attitude of enterprise, of public service, and trying to serve the state in many different ways. One of the underlying themes is how do we improve the efficiency and effectiveness of state government, including evaluating program effectiveness, We have a group called the Results Team that looks at evidence-based practices, as well as coordinating cross-agency solutions, as evidenced by our Children's Cabinet work and support of other cross-agency efforts. We do all this with a really small team. We have about 270 employees, and this slide just gives you a quick snapshot of the scope and volume of our work and the kinds of things that go on. Even in preparing these slides, I looked at it again and said, really? My goodness. The number of paychecks, the number of transactions, the volume of responsibilities, and the importance of getting it right is ever present in the things that MMB does. The most important for the finance division is probably, well, how do we get financed as well? And this slide just gives you a sense of the oversight and the financial resources that MMB directly manages. We manage more than just our operating budget. That's really a small slice of the entire pie. It's about 2%. But our statewide debt service payments, enterprise-wide insurance benefits, and other payments that MMB makes on behalf of the state. We refer to those as non-operating payments. And overall, this funding totals about $3.6 billion annually. As we drill into the spending, though, we are going to focus on that small slice of the pie that represents the operating budget of MMB. Our agency operating budget is $56 million annually. Roughly half of the spending is from the general fund. The other half is through enterprise billings and internal service funds. As you can see, the largest piece of the pie is on IT, information technology related to our enterprise resource management system. This system is the platform for all agencies using accounting, payroll, human resource transactions, and that's about $10 million a year. Or about half of this is the IT ERP spend, and it's collected through statewide billing authority from other state agencies. And the remainder comes from MMB from other sources. So think about it as it's kind of a partnership, because we're working on behalf of agencies to make sure they get the best sort of platform and way to do their business, and the legislature allows us to bill those state agencies for part of that. We'll be probably talking about that more. Our largest area of spending is our communications and planning division, which is 18% of our operating budget. Majority of that spend is management analysis and development team, MMB's nationally recognized fee-for-service management consulting group. And they conduct work on behalf of public service organizations across the state. This is a really fast tour through what we do, but I just want to comment on it sort of with pride of the accomplishments of the agency. You know, it has been a team that has dove into responsiveness, whether it's in good budget times or bad budget times, in pandemic or emergency, in contracts, and in so many different settings where we're trying to work with agencies to better the state of Minnesota. Some of the accomplishments are listed here on the screen. Just this past year, we received the highest rating from all three rating agencies, all the Wall Street rating agencies, and getting a AAA rating in all places. We haven't had that position for about 20 years. And that's not just about money. That's about how we run our business, how we work together with the legislature, how we constantly look at risks and respond to them proactively. And that is just a feather in the cap of both our agency, about the legislature, the governor, and the state as a whole. Through working with on federal funds, you know, there were a lot of changes and a lot of challenges ahead. Early in the pandemic, Deputy Commissioner Breton was a state budget director. And we responded to that by partnering with state agencies to find ways to pull down FEMA reimbursements and other things. As a result, MMB successfully returned more than $300 million to the general fund and state appropriations from those COVID reactions. And the results team recently helped put together a paper on opioid addiction responses that was featured in the national publication JAMA. So, you know, there's many different activities. It is pretty remarkable. The Children's Cabinet worked together with DHS in the Department of Education to get direct certification of kids who had free and reduced lunch and were in Medicaid, but the two systems weren't talking. And so kids who were eligible for a benefit weren't getting it, and they found a way to make sure that those two agencies talked together, shared that information, and as a result, thousands and thousands of kids, 200,000 families, are going to be able to receive that benefit without more paperwork. And finally, our enterprise employee resources team, increased participation in CGIP, our health insurance program, our employee development team has continued to manage and lead emerging leaders and senior leader programs, seeding new management talent in the enterprise, and many other things. So, Madam Chair, members, I'm just really thrilled to introduce MMB. We will work with the committee in many different facets, and happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions? Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to, first of all, thank you. Of course, that work on the free and reduced lunch is really important, and making sure that technology talks to each other, I know, is a passion of several members of this committee. So thank you for that. And you mentioned a JAMA article as well. Would it be possible to get a copy of that article?
Madam Chair, Representative, absolutely.
All right. Thank you very much.
And I would like to extend my gratitude for your improving effectiveness and efficiency and the hard work that you and the members of your staff do for our state, and I look forward to our future conversations. So thank you very much for your presentation today, and we'll be working closely together. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
The next presentation that we will have will be from the Department of Administration. And then on deck, we will also have the Department of Revenue.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members.
Good morning, Commissioner.
For the record, I'm Alice Roberts-Davis, Commissioner for the Department of Administration, and I am joined this morning by our Legislative Director, Julie Byrol. Thank you so much for the opportunity to provide a brief introduction to the Department of Administration. You'll see that our 25 divisions do a lot of different things, so I'll just touch on the highlights and our main functions, but I'll be happy to answer any questions that you have about our work. Our agency has a wide range set of responsibilities that ultimately touch every part of state government. Our role is to best help government serve Minnesotans, and we do that through cost-effective and transparent services that make government more accessible and more responsible to the public. We are a central service agency, which means that in large part, our partners and our customers are other state agencies. We also serve the governor's office, the legislature, local municipalities, and nonprofit organizations, but we do also provide some services directly to Minnesotans. So just to get an idea of the size and scope of our work, here are a few statistics about administration. Our partners that are internal to state government rely on us to provide the core services that they need to keep running efficiently and effectively. These services include overseeing the state's annual purchasing of more than $3 billion in goods and services. We manage 6,200 state-owned buildings, 800 property leases, and more than 290 construction projects annually. We also manage a fleet of more than 2,000 vehicles, and we are the enterprise's insurance agency, protecting $20.6 billion in insured state assets. Our total budget is a mix of legislatively appropriated general fund, enterprise service funds, special revenue funds, and federal grants. The general fund makes up about 12% of admin's budget, but that is a little bit misleading because about half of that is legislatively appropriated pass-through funds, such as in lieu of rent and grant funding to public television and radio stations. The remaining general fund operating budget is dispersed across 13 divisions, and it also includes two open forecasted appropriations, one for our historic preservation projects and one for workers' compensation reinsurance premiums. So next I will highlight the work of our divisions. When you came into the building today, you probably saw some of our facilities maintenance crews who shovel the sidewalks and keep this building clean and operational for you. They are our most visible service, but there's a lot more that we do that is not public facing. For example, we manage, construct, and lease properties for state government. Team members in the facilities management divisions are the ones who respond when you need a light bulb changed or when you need your office painted. And they maintain and operate 23 state-owned buildings, including the state capitol, plus our parking facilities, monuments, and grounds. When money is appropriated to agencies for construction projects, our Real Estate and Construction Services Division manages that work. These projects include planned bonding projects and also unanticipated emergency repairs. The division also provides comprehensive leasing services to state agencies, and they negotiate and manage 800 property leases annually, including state-operated group homes throughout Minnesota. And then our Enterprise Real Property Division coordinates enterprise property data for 19 state agencies. This division utilizes this information to help determine state asset preservation funding needs and the fiscal impact of deferring facility maintenance. We manage the state's fleet, equipment, and insurance. Our Fleet Services Division leases vehicles to state agencies for official state business, and we manage the life cycle for roughly 2,000 vehicles. The Surplus Services Division helps state and federal agencies get rid of property that's no longer needed through either donation or auction. And our Risk Management Division is state government's insurance agent, and we cover their insurance needs as well as state workers' compensation coverage. This division also works to reduce injuries for state workers by leading the state safety program called MinSafe. We provide cost-effective services to support the entire enterprise. Our Small Agencies Resource Team, or SMART, provides administrative services to the state's small agencies, boards, and councils. This central service model allows for those entities to save money and focus on their missions. And the Office of Enterprise Sustainability works with cabinet-level agencies to streamline their operations and bolster their resiliency. They help agencies reduce their energy and water usage and diminish their waste. The office also partners with our fleet and procurement divisions to integrate sustainability measures into all state services. The Office of Collaboration and Dispute Resolution uses proven strategies to help government and stakeholders develop solutions to seemingly impossible problems. And then there's state contracting. The Office of State Procurement oversees the state's goods and services purchases. This division negotiates volume discounts for state agencies and local units of government through 2,300 contracts. In fiscal year 2022, the office negotiated over $14 million in contract savings, and they also manage the largest multi-state cooperative purchasing program in the country. Their colleagues at the Office of Enterprises Office of Equity and Procurement ensure greater equity in state contracting and construction, and they promote opportunities to do business with the state and provide assistance to small businesses owned by women, minorities, and people with physical disabilities, and veterans as well. In fiscal year 2022, we successfully increased the purchasing to $148 million with targeted group businesses. And then finally, our Procurement Technical Assistance Center, or PTAC, offers free training and counseling to all Minnesota businesses interested in selling their products to government. The Minnesota PTAC is nationally recognized as a top program and is funded in part through a cooperative agreement with the U.S. Department of Defense Office of Small Business Programs. The federal government has changed the name of this program to be Apex Accelerators, and we will start transitioning to the new name in the coming months. The work of our Community Services Division are our more public-facing programs. The State Demographic Center analyzes and interprets demographic data and shares it with the public. They were also Minnesota's official liaison with the U.S. Census Bureau for the 2020 census, and their work helped Minnesota achieve a 75.1% self-response rate, which was the best in the country. The Office of the State Archaeologist and the State Historic Preservation Office, or SHPO, protect Minnesota's cultural resources, including archaeological and cemetery sites and historic structures. They work with state, local, and federal government entities and the public to assess proposed development projects and their potential impact on cultural sites. Our other community services divisions ensure that access to state government for all Minnesotans is possible. The Governor's Council on Developmental Disabilities works to assure that persons with developmental disabilities receive the necessary support to achieve increased independence, self-determination, productivity, and integration into the community. And our System of Technology to Achieve Results, or STAR, division helps all Minnesotans with disabilities gain access and acquire assistive technology that they need to live, learn, work, and play. Our STAR program is fairly funded by the Department of Health and Human Services. The Office of Grants Management works in partnership with more than 30 state agencies and organizations to standardize, streamline, and improve state grant-making practices and increase public information about state grant opportunities. And finally, our Data Practices Office is a statewide resource on Minnesota's open meeting law and the Data Practices Act. So as you can see, our work is broad and diverse. We have, again, 25 different divisions, but that concludes my high-level overview of the work that we do at the Department of Administration. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Commissioner. Are there any member questions? Lead Knapp, do you have a question?
I'm good.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much for your testimony today. I want to thank you for your focus on cost effectiveness and transparency. It's important to all Minnesotans that we use their tax dollars responsibly and to serve their needs. So thank you very much. I
appreciate it. Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. And next, we will have the Department of Revenue, followed by Minnesota IT. Commissioner, so great to see you. It's,
Madam Chair, didn't he retire?
You know, retirement is a funny thing, right? Yeah. If I had only known, I would have pushed harder on the tax bill last year. Thank you, Commissioner, and I would ask for you to please introduce yourself and to proceed with your presentation.
Very good. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Paul Marquardt, Commissioner of the Department of Revenue, and not retired any further. So, first of all, very thankful to Governor Walz, Lieutenant Governor Flanagan for this appointment. Look forward to working with all of you and the legislature in the state of Minnesota. I'm joined today by Deputy Commissioner Lee Hull, and also in the back, our legislative coordinator, Marina Herrera-Hines. So they're here to join the answer the tough questions, Madam Chair. So also would like to thank all of you for your vote yesterday on the federal conformity. I mean, that's very important, and it's the Department of Revenue. It's, you know, helping hopefully make things simpler for taxpayers, but also giving them a very important overdue tax break. So thank you so much for that vote. So I'd like to do an overview of the Minnesota Department of Revenue and start with that first page there. In statute, the purpose of the Department of Revenue is to administer and enforce the assessment and collection of taxes. And the most important thing the Department of Revenue does is to provide the revenues to fund important services. You have to have the revenues to be able to do the wonderful things you want to do in the state of Minnesota. And as you look at the vision and values, you know, I was on the other side of the table for 22 years and 18 years as a member of the tax committee, and all of my dealings with the revenue department has, as I look at those, that vision and the values, it's been an excellent agency as a member of the tax and seeing what they have done and helping the legislature and so forth. So all those values are there, and they are valued very highly in this department. Looking at the next slide, $33 billion are collected annually by the Department of Revenue. There's a quick pie chart, maybe more appropriate for the tax committee, but I think it's important for all to see. Half of those revenues, 50%, are income tax, 22% from sales tax and 8% from corporate income tax. So 80% of our revenues are from those big three, income, sales, and corporate. And you see maybe just a little slice of property taxes. You wonder, well, I thought property taxes were a lot more. So that is the state only collects the industrial and seasonal recreational property tax, and all the other, the huge bulk of property taxes, of course, are collected on the local level. Next slide, please. So those are the areas that these revenues fund, and these are all over the state. And this chart doesn't show that part of the work of the department is collecting the $450 million in local option sales taxes by cities and counties that are collected and then distributed directly back to these communities to fund specific projects that these cities and local governments have enacted. So, I mean, this slide right here is the key to why revenue is raised, you know, are these important services. Lots of customers that are really partners with the Department of Revenue. All 87 counties dealing with property and sales tax assessment. You've got local government aid that goes out, county program aid that goes out. Over 3 million individual tax filers. You see there, you have the property tax refund filers. That's the homestead credit state refund and the renters refund, over 800,000 filers there. We work with 800 licensed property tax assessors. You have more than 500,000 businesses and over 300,000 sales tax filers. So our customers also are tax professionals. You know, we work with military personnel, families, individuals, farmers, businesses, the entire state of Minnesota are our customers. Besides all of those customers, also in part of state statute for the commissioner and the department is to help the governor and the legislature in the administration of tax policy and tax laws. So if a proposal is coming forward, the department is going to advise here would be the best way that we would be able to administer that. Or if we see something that could make the tax system better for tax filers, simpler, easier to operate through, we make those suggestions. So what I'm saying is that the department and the commissioner isn't just, we're not just collecting and enforcing taxes, we're also proactive in looking at how can we make the tax system better and offering those suggestions to you and the governor as time goes by. Next slide, please. So it's very important when you think about our system is that we really rely on a voluntary involvement by the taxpayer to provide, submit their taxes, either working with tax professionals, some do it themselves, and so forth. And so one of the big department's role is to try to make that as easy and understandable as possible. And so there's a lot of training and outreach that takes place. There's over 200 events a year. We go out and talk about it, income tax, sales tax, property taxes, corporate taxes, work with individuals in businesses, videos, website. We strive to be as open and accessible to people as we possibly can. So that's a big part is this outreach and this system can be very complicated as we know. Try to figure out sales taxes and what that applies to. And so, a big part of the department is trying to work through those type of things. So here are revenue by the numbers. There's about 1,400 employees administering about 30 different tax types. The budget is $188 million a year, with about 75% of that going to employees. And I want to put those numbers in perspective. And I know Representative Nash, we served on the Ways and Means Committee last year, and I remember administrative costs was a concern of yours. And I did some calculating, and it's not up here on the screen, but the department collects, administers, enforces, submits refunds and that for $33 billion at a cost of about $188 million. That's $175 of revenue coming in, and all of that is costing the state $1. And so if you were to put that in kind of a percent of administration, it's 0.6 of 1% of administration to those dollars raised. That, I think is very efficient. Now, I will say, as I mentioned earlier, a big part of this is because you've got a voluntary system of taxpayers. There's a network. So the department is working with a network of 3 million taxpayers and businesses and tax professionals who help generate this system and also certainly save the state some costs. So the taxpayers doing some of that work. But, you know, when you put that in perspective, the department, that what it collects and administers and enforces and sending things out, we work with the frontline worker program in deciding kind of income eligibility and the payments and that type of thing. So there's all of this work taking place, I think, as I look at it, as a very efficient cost to the state. Next slide, please. And so here's what we do. These are the folks. Pretty much those first five auditors through kind of tax aid administrators, that's really the tax administration side. And then you've got researchers, you know, those of you who serve on the tax committee, you're going to get all the tax incident report, the VAS study, and all these things. You're going to get all these reports and research that they do. Next slide, please. We're always trying to increase efficiencies, and believe me, I've done a lot of visiting with folks at the Revenue Department in my first week. And, of course, Deputy Commissioner Ho here can fill you in greatly on all of this. But with going to a hybrid that you'll see more, a hybrid workforce, we have been reducing a lot of our physical space. 7 of the 10 regional offices that we had have been closed. And is that just within the last couple of years? Or
in the last 2 years.
In the last couple of years. And yet, because of the people able to work remote, people haven't had to relocate. So people out around in greater Minnesota have been able to continue to work remotely. And so we're always looking at that, and we're actually looking at space right now at the Stassen building, which is the revenue building over at 601 Roberts Street. And I invite any of you to come over and visit anytime. Fourth floor is where I'm at. So we're always looking at how we can do that, certainly moving to more digital all the time. So printing and mailing costs are going down. That last bullet there, of course, as we know, the IT and cybersecurity is always going to be a top concern, and so we're seeing some rising costs, of course, in that area. Next slide, please. So that's moving to that hybrid business model. In the last 2 years, we've worked to kind of reimagine how we can transition to work to a workplace that serves all of our employees. And the thing that we have found as they've gone to more of a hybrid in the last 2 years since COVID is where the productivity has not gone down, still processing over six million total tax returns, and over 90% of them processed in a timely manner. And I looked at what a timely manner is. It's that if you e-file, it's getting things back and done within 7 days. That's pretty good, 90%. Next slide, please. Kind of the last thing then, very important, of course, is even as we move to this hybrid model, we still have strong protections around data security and privacy through a number of things. You know, virtual private network is a secure state monitored network that all the employees working remotely or elsewhere have to, you know, log into. They have to be authenticated before they can do any work. Encryption, you know, if something would happen to be lost, you wouldn't be able to get in there unless you knew the proper code words and so forth. And then there's something called Gentax, which most states, I think, use this system. It's an integrated tax management system where you can track what employees are doing. So you can track the activity, you can track the security, you can track the work productivity of workers. And this has been very successful as we've moved to this hybrid model. So in short, the Department of Revenue, we make sure that we have the revenues to invest in those important things that impact the quality of life of Minnesotans. And we work with you, we work with taxpayers, we work with the governor, and we work with folks to make that system as seamless and as productive as possible. And so with that, Madam Chair, thank you, and we'll take any questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. Member question? Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Commissioner. So I'm really curious about this hybrid model that you're moving towards. I mean, are you going to, so what percentage of your employees are working from home currently?
Madam Chair, and is it Representative Nadeau?
Nadeau.
Nadeau? Okay,
yes.
Very good.
Yes,
and so, well, and I'll turn this over to Deputy Commissioner Ho, but I believe it's about 80% that are working remotely right now, but I'll turn that over if that's okay, Madam Chair.
Deputy Commissioner.
Chair Cleavorn, Representative Nadeau. We currently have, I think, as the Commissioner said, somewhere between 80 to 90% of our people are working remotely. You know, we did an evaluation of all our work, and a number of our positions really lend themselves to potentially being working remotely. These are like contact center agents, collectors, large numbers of people like that. We also evaluated people that really do need to work in the office, and so we figure we have about 100 people that are required to work in the office. And so many of our employees work in a hybrid manner, which means that they come in the office when they have a business need for potentially meetings or other activities, and then they are working remotely during those other times during the year.
And your, just follow up, and your current plan is to continue that as much as possible? I mean, you noticed you said that there were 7 of 10 regional centers that have closed. Have you seen an impact on access to consumers not being able to come in? There's a lot of people, especially in rural Minnesota, that don't actually have access to technology. Has that had an impact, and do you plan on continuing to move in that direction where it's more remote work?
Deputy Commissioner.
Chair Cleavorn, Representative. This is an evolving, you know, work environment, and we acknowledge that. And we're in the process of reducing some space largely because we know we're not going to need it. You know, but as the environment evolves, we plan to really examine what are the different functions we need. We have placed a priority on the customer service activities that require physical presence. For a lot of those regional offices that we closed, they were mostly a place for auditors to actually do their office work. They were not customer sites. So those were not an issue for us. If you're aware of a customer access issue, we'd appreciate hearing that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Nadeau. Representative Nash.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and Commissioner and Deputy Commissioner, thanks for being here. Obviously, I'm very interested in IT issues, and Deputy Commissioner Ho and I serve on the Technology Advisory Committee. But to the Commissioner, you said that you've shuttered 7 of 10, and that's very intriguing to me. But I guess for our, when you bring your budget, if you could also prepare for us ahead of time, what has been the cost savings after technology investments that you've been able to achieve? Because obviously, as Commissioner Tomes will come forward and tell us, and I know working in the industry, that doesn't come free, but I'd be really keen to know what has been your overall savings that you've been able to achieve as a result of having people work from home. So don't have to answer it now, but really want to look at that, because as we begin hearing those metrics, that gives this committee, which does control a lot of the things that you will have budgeted, a better viewpoint as to how to react to the budget requests that you'll be bringing, knowing that long term, I think that working from home is going to be a greater thing that we are able to do statewide, and obviously being able to get rid of rent in buildings or repurpose those is very, very valuable. So that's something that's going to be the top of mind for me. Because this is the vision that we've all had, and I like hearing that we're using technology to do the same work from a place that we don't have to pay rent on.
Madam Chair and Representative Nash, we'd be happy to provide that when the time comes. So thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Montfort. I would just like to say to that comment, and efficiency is important, right? Cost savings is important. But the work of the department is meeting the needs of Minnesotans and meeting the needs of our state and making sure that we have the adequate revenue to support the budget that Minnesotans require and are asking for. So as we are looking at savings, we also have to make sure that we're meeting needs. And it's a balance, right? It's a delicate dance to not collect one more dollar than we need, but to also make sure that the services that Minnesotans need and request are available to them. Do you have a response to that, Commissioner?
So, well, Madam Chair, the focus on the customer is paramount. And that's, you know, and well, both points you mentioned. Number one, the revenues that fund our important services that create the high quality of life we have in Minnesota is number one. But we work as partnership with the taxpayer. I know it doesn't always maybe seem that way, but that's a key, because the system is really voluntary, is working in providing. And so the easier we can make it, the more information we can give out, the more we can be open and accessible to our customer, our taxpayers, individuals, businesses, whoever, the better this system's going to be, and the more efficiently we're going to be able to bring in the revenues to fund important services.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, follow up to your question for the Commissioner and the Deputy Commissioner. In the process of streamlining and having people work from home, have you missed any service level agreements that you have internally in providing services to your customers or to your clients and the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota?
Madam Chair, if I could have Deputy.
Deputy,
I'll
address that.
Chair Cleaver, Representative Nash. You know, in general, as the commissioner mentioned, our productivity numbers are doing about as well as they did sort of pre-COVID. I think the one area that we are probably losing ground on is just in terms of numbers. So our employee numbers are down from where we were before COVID, largely as a result of the hiring freeze, and we're still trying to climb out of that deficit that we have. And as a result of that, some of our service numbers in terms of our ability to answer calls and respond to taxpayers as quickly as we used to do is slipping some. We've changed our service levels from 2 minutes to 5 minutes in response to calls. And during busy times, sometimes our call waiting times are much longer than that. So, you know, we have experienced some challenges in terms of agency performance from a budget standpoint, but in general, on an individual basis, our performance has been pretty similar.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. Can you follow up?
Just very quickly. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair, and Deputy Commissioner Ho. I do know in the Technology Advisory Committee we've also talked about the deployment of chatbots in order to pick up some of the slack for that. And are you, I don't remember where you are on that particular project.
Deputy Ho.
Chair Cleaver and Representative Nash, we are exploring things like chatbots and more self-service things. We don't currently have a chatbot methodology in place.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Commissioner and Deputy Commissioner, thank you so much for your testimony. And we'll look forward to your budget presentation at a later date.
Madam Chair and members, thank you so much.
Next, we will have Minnesota IT, followed by Metropolitan Council. So if we could please have Commissioner Toms. Welcome, Commissioner and Deputy Commissioner. It's good to see you. If you would state your name for the record and please begin your presentation.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. For the record, my name is Tarek Tomes. I am the Commissioner of Minnesota IT Services and the Chief Information Officer for the state of Minnesota, and really excited to present a brief agency overview for Minnesota IT Services, and thank you for making time for us and giving us that opportunity. Minnesota IT Services, and I could go on really for hours, and certainly will do my best to keep it as brief as possible. We have the honor and the privilege of leading and being team members with 2,400 really dedicated, incredible technologists that really have a incredible passion for providing the best possible technology services to meet the needs of Minnesotans where they are. as well as providing the best possible modern workplace digital experience for our workforce to really allow them to be as effective and efficient as possible. Our role really as the internal service provider for the executive branch of state government, as well as being a service provider literally to every corner of Minnesota, every county, tribal nations, cities, educational opportunities to really be a digital connector throughout the state of Minnesota. We support within the executive branch approximately 35,000 employees and provide that digital modern workplace experience, including devices and oftentimes multiple devices, including mobile devices, for 70 agencies and boards and commissions. We manage an application portfolio of approximately 2,500 applications, which really is the engine, if you will, of state government and that digital connector that connects people to services in an efficient and effective method. We oversee and manage over 400 projects and products that really are aimed at meeting the evolving and changing needs of Minnesotans as defined by legislative objectives and certainly the governor's objectives. We oversee and support and manage and really take tremendous pride in trying to derive as much value as possible out of the programs that our agency partners drive, those dedicated activities, and we've heard about many of those. That is approximately $400 million in IT spend, and our mission to really derive as much value out of that is really important. We support and close approximately 35,000 incidents, items where people raise their hand and say, I need help with something, approximately 35,000 tickets that we resolve in a year. And we are really proud that we have evolved into a space where we have customer sentiment wrapped right into that process, and we average about a 4.7 out of a 5 on a satisfaction perspective on the tickets that we close. And then certainly last but not least, and we've heard this from the previous testifiers, we respond to approximately 1,000 security incidents, and certainly, and I'll get back to this, the legislative body and this body has really helped us and helped the state of Minnesota be much more prudent in how we protect the critical information that Minnesotans entrust us with. We are incredibly proud that in 2022, we received an A grade from the Center for Digital Government on a digital state survey. It was the highest grade that Minnesota has ever received, and we're only one of five states in the country that has received an A grade on that survey. It's a survey that's done every 2 years, and it is really the premier benchmark in terms of how states are delivering technology services. Our mission and values really is you know that thing that unites us in how we do our work and how we provide commonality together with our business partners in what is really, really important for us. And our vision of being the most innovative digital government that meets Minnesotans where they are and is accessible and provides for the needs, whether you're in rural Minnesota or in an urban area, whether you have connectivity or you don't have connectivity, our mission related to being the most innovative digital government that meets people where they are is really our North Star, if you will, and guides us. Our guiding principles are things that we aim and strive to live each and every day, and I'd like to draw particular attention to the last three guiding principles, which certainly over the last 4 years have been very important, but I think are really instrumental. Embracing change, things are continually changing, and things will inevitably and for sure as a part of this legislative session continue to change, and our ability to meet those moments of change are absolutely essential. Measure where you can. We have to understand how we're doing, and we have to make sure that we are continually striving to improve not only how we're doing technology services, but how ultimately we're meeting the mission that government has been assigned to. And then engage with empathy. Technology is not easy for everyone, and making sure that we understand that we engage from a technology perspective with an empathetic lens is incredibly important. Our strategic goals, were derived early on three and a half or 4 years ago in the governor's first term, and we're in the process of refreshing these as the objectives of the next term become clear, as our need to be aligned with our agency business partners and the goals of the administration and the goals of the legislature is really important. certainly bolstering cybersecurity, our ability to deliver the middle goal, promoting a people-centered digital government, will continue to be, I think, absolutely essential. Elevating Minnesota's digital estate, making sure that we lift data up in any and all places where we can to assist and help in making the best decisions with the resources that government is entrusted to manage. From a partnership perspective, like to draw attention or I guess make particular mention to the Technology Advisory Committee, and it's been mentioned a few times. The Technology Advisory Committee is kind of a successor organization, if you will, to the Blue Ribbon Council on IT that Governor Walz initiated early on in his first term. And it is an incredible partnership and advisory committee in the truest sense that has created three different sets of recommendations, not just for how you can be more effective in providing technology services, but also how can government be more effective in using technology services. Representative Nash mentioned the use of chatbots and automation, and I think there are so many opportunities that we will continue to explore and that the Technology Advisory Committee helps to illuminate related to the role that technology can play, a customer service focus, human-centered design, an ability to have persistent funding, a notion of using a product mindset as opposed to a project mindset, but really an incredible body consists of private sector CIOs, private sector members, consists of public sector leadership, members of the legislature, and I'd like to certainly draw particular attention to Representative Bonner and Representative Nash for their unbelievable contributions. Not only are they on the Technology Advisory Committee, but really, really leading contributors to the Advisory Technology Committee. Just a little bit of rear view related to 2022. We completed, and I think we handed out our year review. We do a quarterly of those that we will always share with this body, and then we always do an annual that kind of looks back. And I think it's a certainly would urge you to take just a peek through related to the programs and initiatives and the things that technology has played. All of the preceding testifiers has in one way, shape, or another prominently mentioned technology, prominently mentioned cyber. They have mentioned certain application aspects, and I did not prepare them or ask them to mention that, but I certainly thought it was fitting, and I was glad that they went in front of us with those prominent mentions of technology. So we delivered 160 projects and initiatives, and the volume of work that we delivered certainly is much, much larger than that. We also, of course, provide for the day-to-day capabilities of the executive branch and the running of that 2,500 application portfolio, and so the everyday running. And so 160 new projects and initiatives, some that are noteworthy, worth mentioning, delivered over $500 million to Minnesotans that worked on the front lines of COVID via the frontline worker pay initiative as it was defined by the legislature. And really, I think an astounding piece of work in that it was delivered in literally 3 to 6 months, very successfully, incredibly high fraud detection mechanisms built in and digital entryway to apply, a digital mechanism for validating via unemployment insurance checks to make sure that people were eligible for the program. Really proud of that. Similar activity related to veterans, $25 million for veterans that were eligible that served 9/11 and a digital entryway to provide those benefits to those individuals quickly. I think Commissioner Showalter mentioned the direct Medicaid certification, a program that we're incredibly proud of, that really was a digital connector between multiple agencies that in previous times may not have always worked quite that way in a siloed mechanism, but we were able to use Medicaid certification to provide free or reduced lunch benefits to approximately 200,000 children. Work that the 2,400 technologists within Minute are incredibly passionate about, ultimately just making a difference for people. The application portfolio, this is really what I think is and should be and has to be one of the most important strategic assets of the executive branch of state government and of Minnesota. The 2,500 applications, they literally are the engine that powers so many of the transactions. It's the way you get into a state park. It's the way you may file taxes. It's the way that you may apply for unemployment insurance benefits, the entryway for how you get services from human services. 2,500 applications, and that application portfolio historically, frequently has been unfunded. We've heard two examples of applications that are within this application portfolio, Gentax from the Department of Revenue, and we've heard Commissioner Showalter mention the state's ERP system. And our ability to really make sure that Minnesotans have the types of services with the digital capabilities and the efficiencies and effectiveness in that portfolio in a way that is protected, that has the cyber protections, is really incredibly important. 196 of those applications are cloud-based. Noteworthy is 331 of those applications support over 10,000 users. So huge impact, and certainly, you know, if you look at it from how can I derive value for constituents, for the people that are using, making sure that those applications have the right protections and the right capabilities is incredibly important. We categorize them from P1 to P4, which really goes from a classification of life and safety to large-scale economic impact in Minnesota to smaller-scale applications that may be internal to an application. And each one of those has a different recovery objective associated with it. But an investment in this space is one that is incredibly crucial. It really is a space where we can directly move the needle related to both the effectiveness and the efficiency and how we connect with Minnesotans digitally. From a cybersecurity perspective, and certainly one of the most important roles that we play is both ensuring that the application portfolio and the data for those things that are within the executive branch of state government is protected. Also a leadership role for how we provide services throughout Minnesota. Many counties and cities and educational organizations or tribal nations leverage our services and our cybersecurity services throughout Minnesota. Two things to draw attention to. We created in 2022 a cyber commission to create a statewide cybersecurity plan that will ultimately determine how federal funding, if we are able to move forward with receiving federal funding, is to be used across the state of Minnesota. And that cybersecurity task force, really tremendous representation from counties and cities, private sector CIOs, health institutions, critical infrastructure institutions, members of the legislative body, and really excited for the work that they are currently doing and certainly as they look to create the first version of this statewide all-inclusive cybersecurity plan. The governor in 2022 issued an executive order related to cybersecurity that has been incredibly helpful and beneficial and one that we're certainly eager to have more discussion with the legislative body and the legislative cybersecurity commission. It has had, as one byproduct, it has had an effect of increasing by 300% the number of organizations that are signed up to really receive real-time threat dissemination communication with the Minnesota Fusion Center. And so really, really effective so far in terms of just protecting not just the executive branch, but critical infrastructure providers and many organizations that may not necessarily have the means and mechanisms. From a cybersecurity enhancements perspective, this is a little bit of a real rear view. We really wanted to point out and call out incredibly thankful to the legislature for the $5 million investment that was done in the previous budget session as provided by the state government finance omnibus bill. And this $5 million investment in cybersecurity has really had a profound impact. We blocked almost 90,000 phishing messages in 2020, and that number that I shared earlier, the 1,000 incidents that we respond to, really is approximately a 50% decrease from 2019, so prior to this investment. And it's a really direct correlation that we have seen between the investment that was provided and the reduction in cyber threats. A lot of that is putting multiple layers of tooling in place to make sure that we have the right defenses as threats continue to evolve and change. And we certainly are all aware of the geopolitical landscape worldwide that will continue to raise the cyber threat vector that faces all of us, and not just in public sector, but certainly private sector. There is a list. I have our team compile a list that I certainly would love to share with this body of really large-scale cyber incidents that occur both globally and United States-wide, and it's really both an eye-opener and concerning, and really illustrates the need for us to continue to do everything that we can to invest and stay ahead to protect the services that we provide. From a just briefly how we work perspective, we really strive in every sense of the word, and the Technology Advisory Committee and the Blue Ribbon Council on IT has been really instrumental to model ourselves after other internal service IT organizations that serve a large organization. We provide a leadership perspective. We provide services from enterprise services, security services, and then we have dedicated teams at each of the agencies that are the most intimate with the particular needs of the agency. And then last, briefly, just wanted to touch on funding. From the funding slide, as you see, the largest share of funding really is that piece that is at agencies, at program areas. Approximately $180 million in funding is those things that organizations use in common. And then one of the things that, one of the numbers that we kind of keep our eye on where we actually spend money, $42 million is spent on equipment. And we continue to track that as we leverage more and more cloud services to decrease the spend on capital expenditures. Madam Chair and committee members, thank you so much for giving us the time. I apologize about going on and on. We're incredibly passionate about the work that we're doing, and I will certainly stand for questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. And I think we could do multiple days on this topic. Members of the committee, Representative Nash, do you want to go first, or do you?
I'll go first. I'll be brief. And I know that's unusual, but I'll be brief. Madam Chair and Commissioner, Deputy Commissioner, thanks for being here. And I'm just going to preface by saying this is something that folks watching online should recognize is a very much bipartisan effort. When I got to the legislature 9 years ago, Mr. Eichten was here, and I will be very blunt. I rode him like a rented mule because at the time, Minute was not running well. It was bumpy, and it had just come out of the consolidation effort. And it was not a well-run organization. And through bipartisan relationships that we have here, it has gotten better. And one of the metrics that I can give of that is that colleagues that used to throw me out of their office when I would go to talk about cybersecurity are no longer throwing me out of their office to talk about cybersecurity. But I think that we have shed cost. We have increased efficiencies. We have become more secure. We have been awarded awards for doing good work. And I think a lot of the credit goes to finally figuring out how do we work together as different branches of government to recognize that the job that we have is to secure the infrastructure that we have here that belongs to the people of the state of Minnesota, and then to deliver a high level of service to them. We have ways to go. And the one question that I'll ask, and you don't have to answer it now, but you can get it to me later, is on your slide number 7 of the 2,509 active applications, 196 are cloud-based. You know I'm a big SaaS and cloud fan. That's software as a service for anybody else. What is the plan to migrate the things that we have that are on-prem to a higher level? And that's – okay, sorry, I'll stop trying using acronyms, but on-prem means things that we own that are in a data center that we own on a piece of iron that we own. What is our progressional plan to get more things into the cloud, because that does reduce our CapEx?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Nash, committee members, thank you for the question. One of our most important initiatives is an initiative that we refer to as CloudRamp, and it is really geared towards moving on-premise workloads into the cloud. And we're very intentional in terms of our approach. If we can rent something, we want to rent it. And rent for us, it really is analogous to cloud. If we can't rent it, then we want to buy it, which means, you know, buying a solution from a vendor and deploying it on infrastructure that's managed in the cloud. And only if we can't rent or buy something do we look to build something. And government occasionally has the need to build something. And so we are very active in moving those workloads and changing, continuing to change those metrics as they not only improve the quality of services that are delivered, but they also improve our risk posture, our cybersecurity posture. So many of the things. So I really appreciate that question and would certainly welcome taking an even deeper dive with you on that.
And Madam Chair, thanks for working with me to get the Cloud First bill that we passed a number of years ago that I authored passed, because that actually was the on-ramp for this. And thanks, Representative Bonner, for being a co-author on that. Good things are happening, better things are ahead, and it is unusual for me to say that in this committee, but I think that this is an opportunity for us to model for other work that we do. You've got a lot of people from around the state that are big name CIOs on the TAC, and they are bringing their experience for free to us, and I think that that is something that's noteworthy that we've been doing for the last number of years.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Deputy Commissioner, for being here. I just want to say thank you. I don't know that most of the public realizes that this is probably one of the great success stories here at the Capitol. This partnership between public, private, state agencies, folks on both sides of the aisle, which ironically we are almost always in step. In fact, I recall one meeting in which Representative Nash offered to make me an honorary member of the Republican Party because we agreed so often. So I politely declined. But my point is this. I just wanted to put some perspective around what we've talked about here, too, in a couple of things. First, in the earlier presentation we had with the Department of Revenue, I want to call out the excellent work of Deputy Commissioner Ho, who actually sits on the Technical Advisory Council. And when we talk about being responsive to customers, I just want to be very clear that he has been an intimate part of the conversations around being customer-centric and making sure that our solutions fit our customer, and has been very instrumental in those conversations. And I know the energy that our new commissioner brings to the table will ensure that he will be very hands-on in that approach as well. So thank you for that. Representative Nash also mentioned cloud. Basically, that means we save money, but it also ensures continuity of our business and our services, and it also ensures that we are able to make sure that we have good disaster recovery. So that's why that's important to the public. Lastly, I just wanted to do two really quick things. We talked a lot about customer-centric, that using IT as a tool to literally change lives. And on the page where we talked about 2022 in review, I just want to be really clear, because the commissioner has not tooted his own horn here enough, but this is basically a page full of successes for the state of Minnesota, not just from an IT perspective, but all of the pieces on this page have made marked differences in the lives of Minnesotans, making their lives easier, streamlining process, making it easier for them to receive services, people who really, really need it. So this is really great work, and I encourage folks to continue to look at those. And lastly, I just want to say from a cyber perspective, we talk about this, and this is these are the unsung heroes. We have deflected so many cyber attacks, so many phishing scams that you cannot even begin to fathom. And these folks do this work day in and day out, and they do it without any recognition and barely with any knowledge that it's even happening from the public. It is really extraordinary, and it is really great to be a part of that partnership with state agencies in order to make that happen. So I want to thank you. And one last thing is that we want to make sure that as we get efficiencies on things like combining offices, giving more flexibility in the workplace, that also means that we have to ramp up our technology. That also means funding, which will come before this particular panel. We have money that will come forward on matching funds for our cybersecurity task force, which is really critical to the functioning of our state, as well as investments in IT that really can change people's lives. So
just a shameless plug to put that before the committee, that those things will be coming forward and they have not always gotten the attention they deserve. Thank you for that.
Representative Bonner, I would just like to conclude by saying I love it that you talk about secure, reliable services and solutions, and that you are focused on being effective and efficient as well as transparent and helping our communities. And then, you know, as we think about Minnesotans, right, we are a state that has a good number of seniors, as you well know. So we want to make sure that we are always, as you stated earlier, customer focused and making sure that they too have access and that interface is clean and easy to navigate so that the ordinary person can navigate those systems and applications. So thank you very much for your work, and we look forward to our future budget conversation. Thank you. And next we will have the Metropolitan Council. And this will be our last presentation. I just like to apologize in advance. You have less than 9 minutes. So. Thank you, Chair. If you would please introduce yourself for the record and then begin your presentation. And I would just like to remind you, we do end at 10. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Charlie Zelli, Chair of the Metropolitan Council. I'm joined by Judd Shetnan, who's the Director of Government Affairs. When you have a name that starts with Zelli, you're used to being last, and I will be very fast.
Thank you so much.
This is a comprehensive kind of overview of Met Council, so I will make it brief. I think many people are familiar, but maybe there are some nuggets that we can help share that kind of show that although we're not a state agency, we play a really important role as part of the administration and certainly for the metropolitan area. You know, there is a 55 roughly year tradition. It was started because no one community could handle some aspects by themselves. And also the fact that at one time there was a state planning agency. We're really the planning, fundamentally a planning agency for the metropolitan area. 180 communities, you know, when you think about Minneapolis, that only represents 11% of the population of the metropolitan area. We have a really robust metropolitan area. It's very diverse, and it is increasing in population. It has rural areas, it has farmland, it has core center cities, and certainly a lot of suburban, exurban areas. This is really the jurisdiction you can see on the screen, 16 separate districts, and then one at large, which is my role as chair, but really do have a diverse geographically and in all respects council that represent the interests of this kind of you know, robust area within our state. Really important to recognize that although we are appointed, we go through a process, which we're actually going through now for reappointments and some new council members coming in. That goes through a nominating committee, which is also appointed by the governor, but recommendations are made. We have former elected officials. We have private sector representatives, community activists. We have people who have been here on the council since the Pelini administration, so it really does represent, I believe, a very broad view. I'll just kind of get into the idea of what we really do and what we stand for. We're really much part of not just transportation, which we're perhaps best known for, but really fundamentally kind of a catalyst for inclusive economic development, looking after our environment, looking after housing affordability, open space parklands, So when you think about some of the core visions that are expressed in our 2040 plan, Thrive, it really is consistent with One Minnesota values and ultimately goals. But being primarily a planning agency, we are used to taking a very long view and very much of a coordinating view for all the different local jurisdictions within the area. We have really three different divisions. Maybe many are familiar with the Transportation Division, which is both operations and planning. And it is one that we have the biggest relationship with the legislature because there is some state funding associated with transportation. The community development includes park, housing. We actually operate the largest housing authority. And then environmental services, we'll get into a minute, with our wastewater and our water research and supply, water supply work. But there really are three different divisions guided by an overall kind of framework values that I described before. Thinking about community development, and there's a list of various statutes, we really are a number of different roles we have, both in administering the Land Planning Act, providing development grants, pollution cleanup grants, and then we're a conduit for both federal and state funds coming to our regional park system. As I mentioned, we're primarily, this is where our planning work is done. We have just, we'll get into the planning process in a minute, but when we think about planning and economic development, it kind of goes hand in hand with land use, transportation, and environmental services. The regional planning cycle, here it is. We are just embarking on our 2050 planning process, which results in a policy guides, both for transportation, but also parks, water resources, and housing. We are just finishing the review of the 180 comprehensive plans that come as a result of the 2040 Thrive vision. Now we're starting the 2050 plan, and we'll start this 10-year cycle all over again. And I think this, again, is a role where we play a coordinating, aligning role. We do not impose specific requirements. We are more of a resource and a coordinating role among all the different municipalities within the metro area. Again, you can see this planning cycle is really at a crux now, given the last 2020 decade. After the census, we kind of start the planning process all over again. So environmental services, everybody knows, not everybody knows, that we operate a wastewater system for the entire metropolitan area. One of the reasons I think a lot of people don't know is that it's A, underground, and B, it is incredibly well capitalized. It does not require outside state subsidy. It is on a fee-based system, and it is incredibly efficient. In fact, it's one of the most affordable systems in the nation for municipal areas. And one of those, I think, was the strategic decision decades ago where we separated wastewater from stormwater. And that is now becoming acutely beneficial because given the weather patterns of climate change, not knowing that stormwater goes into our lakes and rivers and not into the system where it caused backflow of effluents. And if you read stories about Chicago and Cleveland and Detroit, we are very fortunate. And because it is a pretty well-capitalized interceptor system throughout the metro area, we know and we have been working on providing some special assistance to some of those connections, both municipal and then actually to the home itself. We could talk about some days. But we are continuing to improve that. We have a robust capital program, and we're very proud of our work here. Also, very important that we do not supply water, but we are the resource for every municipality in order to know what resources they need, how it's developed, and we work with other agencies in developing that information. I described this robust wastewater system, a number of different plants, certainly the one in St. Paul is best known because it's the largest, but it is a series of wastewater plants around the metro. I described the supply side planning that we work with other agencies. Transportation, maybe we're best known for. We're both a planner and an operator, and we operate the largest transit system, Metro Transit, but we also provide resources for outside private contractors, as well as coordinate support for some of the independent operators like the suburban transit operators. Again, this is deep research. This provides a kind of a thoughtful planning where we coordinate both public, private, and surface and aviation as well. I described the various transit operations we have. The transit system itself, I could spend the next hour talking about how we're building out in the next 8 years, both arterial bus rapid transit and, of course, the light rail transit way systems. This will really be a network, and it already is, but we'll see profound changes in the next 4 to 5 years as these AVRTs connect with each other, and we'll really reduce the amount of time it takes to get to wherever you want to go, and not just jobs, but people living their lives. Important note here to describe our Transportation Advisory Board. We often talk about our role as the MPO, the Metropolitan Planning Organization for this region. That is really done as part of our Transportation Advisory Board, which is embedded within our Transportation Division. This is an independent 34-member board, many of them elected officials. In fact, 18 are elected officials. It is a COG, I think is often referred to, a committee of government officials. This is the one that makes recommendations to us for both planning, our transportation policy plan, our transportation improvement plan, and actually we read recently the $350 million of our regional solicitation, which really supports transportation in the metropolitan area. Very important to note that the Metropolitan Council, when we think about governance, never votes to amend that. We simply accept their recommendations. With that, I hope I didn't speak too fast, but I covered a lot of material. And if there are any questions, we've got the answers, or at least Judd does.
I think what we'll have to do is save questions for another day. I'm sure you'll be before us, and I understand that we may be on a field trip to see you as well. So I will thank you for your testimony today, and we will adjourn the committee. Thank you.
Thank you.
With that, members, we are adjourned. Yeah.